Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast, coming at you from the BMW International here in Cologne. We are here with Mr. Steven Jaeger. Steven, you're from Germany, but you're not from this area. Does this feel like a homecoming being here?
It does. I mean, you know, I don't get to go to Germany very often. I go maybe once a year for Christmas, see my family and stuff. But I've never been in this area, so it's kind of new to me. And looking at the cathedral behind us here, it's a pretty cool spot. And golf course is great. It was tough today, but no, it's great to be here. It's great to be home.
How much of a wrinkle is this in your schedule to come over to pop over here to play for 1 week?
Well, you know, good thing is we're playing on the East Coast next week. So, you know, if it was across to all the way to West Coast, it kind of would be a long, long haul back. But, you know, we're in D.C. next week. And, you know, I can sleep pretty well on planes. So I'll just pop a couple of glasses of wine and I'm out for, you know, 6 or 7 hours and I'm fine. So it shouldn't be too much of a hassle.
Going west is the easy part.
Yes. Yeah, well, because you just wake up early.
Yeah.
So you're up at 5 and you get a couple cups of coffee and you're ready to go.
Well, I think this whole trip has been one giant kind of learning experience for us about mm-hmm. golf in Germany. We're mm-hmm. curious as to what your background in the game is growing up here and how you ended up in the States and then just in general kind of what golf is like in Germany.
Well, and did you pass the golf test?
Yes.
We're fascinated.
You learn about that, okay?
Yes. Phil, you got to fill people in on
what that is.
We're
kind of mortified by it.
So, so you have to have a test on a I'm gonna say like on a short course or even on a long course. I think you're accompanied by a PGA professional. I'm guessing. I did it so many years ago. I can't remember. But you have to shoot a certain score to be allowed on the golf course by yourself, which is so German. It's not even funny. You know, you're just, you know, there's a regulations for everything. But it's. I grew up very close to the golf course. I mean, we're, you know, half a mile from the golf course where my parents live, and they played some golf, and I was always somebody that, you know, I was driving the carts when, you know, I was 5 or 6 years old and vacation and stuff, and my sister played, and it's just, you know, once you kind of see your parents playing and your sister playing it, and I want to try this out, and it was fun. I played, you know, played some golf on the weekends, played with my family, but most of the time, I played other sports, you know, soccer and the big sports here in Germany are probably soccer and, you know, maybe tennis, ice hockey in the winter. So it wasn't in the front of my mind until I was probably 13, 14, and I got pretty good pretty quick, you know, as kids do. And, it's viewed a little different here than it is in the States.
How so?
Because you're even in Europe, it's more of a sport. So we do, you know, in Germany especially, you play it and you want to get better. You want to, you know, you want to take lessons and you want to, you know, practice and you want to, you know, compete in tournaments, local tournaments. And in the States, you just get drunk and play 9 holes with your buddies. I mean, really is. Most of the public courses in Chattanooga, they give you a 6-pack when you buy a round, which I mean that just shows you. And I don't think I've ever seen anybody drink anything but water or like electrolyte drinks in German when they were playing golf, because they, you know, want to stay focused and you want to, you know, stay, you know, ahead of the game and you know, all that stuff. So it's taken a little differently. I think it's probably just the culture, but more people play golf in America, and I think the fun part about, you know, we'll just play with our buddies and have a couple of beers and have some fun and listen to music. I've never listened to music in Germany, and I think you would get, you know, yelled at from every group around you. Hey, turn the music off or whatever. But Yeah, it's definitely a different mindset on it. I think it's probably just how we are as Germans and how kind of laid back Americans are. And,
yeah, because you referenced earlier just kind of when you said that the golf test is like the most German thing ever. So what do you mean by that for people that have never been to Germany before?
It's just very, very regulated, very, you know, planned. Everything's got to have a test. I mean, our driving test, kind of, you know, going from BMW, takes like 6 months. You have to have like a certain amount of hours on the road. Then you have to have at least 6 hours on Autobahn. You have to have 6 hours at night. You have to have 6 hours in the rain. You have to have, you know, you have a, you know, well, minimum of.
It certainly shows. Because everybody,
well, I mean,
everybody
if
knows
driving,
how to drive over here.
If you're driving 150 miles an hour, yeah, you better kind of know what to do.
It's been a pleasure to
yes,
drive over here.
Yes. Everybody turn, you know, when you're overtaking somebody on Autobahn in the left lane, you get back over in the right. There's no cars staying in the left lane and waiting for somebody to flash lights at you, because they will, and put the blinker on and all kinds of stuff. But it's just very, very organized, and that's not a bad thing necessarily. I mean, you know, they're very efficient and very, you know, planned and smart in that way. But that kind of, you know, putting that in golf, it's tough sometimes because it's such a mental sport that you're, you know, you've got to be a little free and you've got to be, you know, kind of laid back. Otherwise, it's just miserable.
Not everything always goes according to plan.
No, not in golf.
One of my favorite things, my friend that used to live in Munich, he was telling me how he crossed the street once when there was no cars coming, but he didn't have the green light to do it, and he got yelled at by another person because he was potentially going to teach young kids the wrong thing. And I watched people, we were just, I know Bavaria is different than the Cologne area, but we watched the people just stand there at a red light just not crossing the street despite no cars coming. Yeah. It's a rules-based society.
It really is. I think, you know, and older people are not afraid to kind of be like, hey, listen, you youngin', hey, you don't do this. Because if a kid sees it, he runs over the road. I mean, it makes sense, but in the, you know, big picture, you know, chill.
Right. So what was, you know, what was that? Had you came over to the States and went to for high school, correct?
Yeah,
when you were an exchange student, had you been to the States before that?
So yeah, I mean, my dad used to own a travel agency back in the day, so we traveled all over the place. We, you know, we kind of did the touristy Grand Canyon, did a little, you know, kind of rented a car and drove around that area a little bit, and but never really, you know, southeast part. You know, you go to Florida when you're from Germany, you go to maybe California, but Tennessee is not really,
it's different.
It's different, but
a whole lot of Americans.
I love
Tennessee.
Love it. I really do. The people are so nice. The landscape is unbelievable. You know, you go to Smoky Mountains, you go all that, it's incredible. And I just kind of fell in love with it, and it was just gonna be for a year, and ended up being, I think I'm my 12th year, so it's been a while.
So I'm trying to place your accent. Like, I knew that you were from
it's German American.
it's German Tennessean
for sure.
Yeah, you got a little bit of Tennessee coming out every now and then.
Yes, a little bit of German coming out when the more drunk I get and or tired, but it's, I can hide it pretty well. Normally the German accent, you've heard it this week, it's pretty strong. I can tell a German accent across, you know, from a mile away. Oh, like, that guy's German. I can actually see a person, how they're dressed. I'm like, oh, he's German. 100%.
Really?
Oh, 100%. it's, you can notice it very easily if you know what you're looking for.
What's the difference really between like Bavaria, Southern Germany, and like the rest of Germany? Correct? Because Bavarians kind of identify themselves. alley-oop for that one. That
touche,
was easy.
No.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, we've got the Alps, which, you know, for a lot of the Bavarian, you know, you grew up, you go skiing. You go out, play ice hockey. It gets pretty cold. It gets a lot of snow. But we're very influenced by the Austrian, Switzerland. They're very similar in accent wise, food wise is pretty similar, but you know, we're probably the most laid back. If you look at the whole Germany, the most laid back people. Bavarians. I mean, they're, you know, you're still, you know, Munich's a different park because Munich's very metropolitan, pretty happening, you know, a lot of businesses there. So you've got a wide variety there. But, you know, the more north you get, the more proper the proper the language gets, you know, the proper, you know, all those things kind of get. And the Bavarians, I mean, you've seen, I don't know if you've seen any Lederhosen or outfits, you know, we
do
we
a proper,
party.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been to Oktoberfest. That is,
yes.
Without a doubt,
we party.
Probably the craziest party I think I've ever been to.
I think it's definitely the top two or three that I've ever been on. I mean, it's for me, it's Vegas and Oktoberfest and two completely different worlds.
Yeah.
But it's pretty crazy. It definitely is. I hadn't been in a couple of years, but I left when I was 17, so I couldn't really go before. But it's probably a good thing, I would say.
Where do you play most of your golf in Chattanooga?
Two golf courses. I'm two members of two courses, the Country Club, Chattanooga Country Club, and Council Fire. Mm-hmm. Those are the two main private golf courses that I've joined when I kind of got on tour and stuff. And love them. Country Club is you know, old school, kind of short. I don't know if you know when you guys were in Chattanooga played or not. Mm-hmm. I saw you dinner one night. You were very close to the Country Club. I mean, you could probably hit 7-iron over there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Very, very close to that Tremont Tavern burger place.
That place was great.
It was good. Yeah. But no, it's those two golf courses, the Council Fire, they changed the greens a couple years ago. Very, very pure greens at all times. Golf course is in great shape. And most of the practice I do is the UTC facility. They, you know, they built that maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and except for the team, it's just me out there, which is great because I can hit balls, nobody bothers me. I can just get my stuff done and leave, which it's a really good setup for me. I love it, and I don't think I'll be leaving anytime soon.
So when you were looking at going to schools, did you look at going anywhere else besides UTC? Or did you just like Chattanooga that much? And just,
well,
just
so when I was only in Chattanooga for 2 years before college. Mm-hmm. So as a junior, you don't get, I mean, every big school is already recruited, freshman and sophomore. So as a junior, you're kind of behind the A ball a little bit because you're, you know, you kind of still trying to prove yourself in front of college coaches and, you know, at state and all that stuff. They don't know who you are. I mean, nobody mm-hmm. really knows who you are. And that second year helped that I stayed a second year at Baylor school there in Chattanooga. And, I had probably two more offers. I think Kentucky and Virginia were the two next that I could have gone to. And I think I was scared of Virginia because I heard it was kind of hard. It's kind of like for smart people. And I had the hardest time at Baylor school already. It was just, you know.
Well, so at Baylor, I mean, did you guys have like the best high school golf team in the history of
well,
the country?
So it was funny because we played this McDonald's event every year, and there was one school that could compete with us. It was Edmund North, and I don't know if you've known any of the guys that played at Edmund North.
Kevin Tway,
yeah. Will Kropp, Ben Klaus, who played at Vandy. I can't remember a couple guys, but those were the only guys that could compete with us. I mean, we won state, but
so who else was on 40. Your team?
Harris was a senior. Harris English was a senior when I was a junior. And then Keith, who's on tour, Keith Mitchell, he was a freshman when I was a junior. Jay Vandervenner, he played at Tennessee. He was on the same team. Ryan Thornton, who played at Vandy, same team. So I think our top seven all went to Division I colleges.
And Luke List was a little bit before.
Well, Luke was older than us. Okay. I mean, Luke's probably 4 years older than Harris. So I think he only played with Harris for a year, maybe.
Okay.
But yeah, we probably at the time could have beat UTC in a match just because, you know, they're just getting to the point where they're getting good. Yeah, I'd have loved to have seen it, but you know, we're also juniors in high school, so you can't really compare that to college golf. Sure. You play 6,500 yard golf courses, and you know it's different. But we had a really stacked high school team for sure.
A quick break to again remind you guys about the incredible magazine that our friends from Callaway Golf sent over. They collaborated with Whalebone Magazine, which is an award-winning quarterly publication, an authentic lifestyle brand based out of New York. They produce what they're calling the Golf Issue, and it is not your typical golf magazine. It's filled with some of the most creative, artistic, and approachable spreads that you can imagine seeing in a golf publication. Of special note is the behind-the-scenes look at renowned sports photographer Walter Yost's favorite golf photographs and the stories behind them. Even Michelle Wee contributed in the Rad Girls of Golf spread, which is a look at a few junior girls already taking the game by storm. There's a surprise every time you turn the page, and I'm not exactly sure what kind of paper they use, but that even adds to the experience, the amazing texture of the paper and of the magazine. So it's a special edition book and has massive coffee table appeal. To get your copy, go to shopwhalebone.com. Click on the golf category. They won't last long, so please do go quickly. They've also got some limited edition gear in there, the custom OGO stand bags, and some sandblasted Mac Daddy 4 wedges stamped by the master himself, Anthony Toronto. So go to shop.whalebone.com, pick up the Golf Issue and some merchandise as well. Now let's get back to our podcast with Stephen Yeager.
I think when he was asking about golf course in Tennessee, he was dying for you to get your input on Sweetens Cove.
I figured he's Germany. There's not enough rules there for him.
Yeah, drive anywhere you want.
He goes there and he just freaks out. Yeah, yeah. This is madness. Yeah, what are you guys doing?
Well, don't have to rake this bunker. Okay, fine. I like Sweetens. I really do. It's a great gambling golf course.
Exactly.
Because there's so many birdies and there's so many. I mean, so much crazy stuff going on. I don't think I would like to play in a tournament, but for gambling purposes, it's awesome because you can, you know, I wish they would put two pins on the greens. I've told the guys out there, but they want to keep it as a nine-hole golf. I get it. You know, that's what they're, you know, kind of, you know, supporting. But I think the greens are big enough to put two flags on there.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't even see the other flag. I mean, the greens are so massive and they're so, you know, undulated that you could play 18 holes easy and to make it two different golf courses. But I think it's a cool little track. And it's, you know, it's just one of those. How big is the sign? Maybe 2 feet by 1 foot.
Three pieces of barn wood, yes. I think. Yeah.
And, you know, no clubhouse. And it's just, it's just got a cool vibe to it, and you know, we don't really go that often just because when I'm home, I just, you know, I practice and go to my places and don't drive 40-45 minutes mm-hmm. to Sweetens. But it's a really cool spot, and I think they've done well with it there. And
it's crazy how much good golf there is in Chattanooga.
It really is. I mean, you know, you got the honors as well, that that's, you know, always top 100 in the States every year.
Black Creek.
Yeah. And then the farm.
It does have some black rocks in it, though. I don't know if you've played it, but
Lookout Mountain.
Yeah. God, that place drives you nuts. I don't know if you have somebody that plays there all the time, but I remember the second green of Lookout Mountain. I think it goes uphill towards the back right, but everything's downhill. So you're like, yeah, I'll hit this a little harder off the green long. I mean, it's just because it's on a mountain. It's just kind of crazy, but it's good, man. But where we don't have is good public courses, really. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot of really good private courses around. Even the farm in Dalton is pure.
Oh, it's always everything.
Awesome. And it's a lot of good golf around Chattanooga and within an hour, which is fantastic. So,
well, you mentioned with Sweetens, you know, it's a good gambling course. Wouldn't want to play a tournament. What makes a good tournament course for you, or what's the difference?
I think if you would have to put the green, if you would have to make the greens tournament speed at Sweetens, I think it would get too
it's
crazy.
Just not pinnable. And, yeah.
You have three pins on a. You know, huge green. Mm-hmm. You know, if I think of, you know, number three,
right,
The front whole left front part of the green is unusable if you're rolling 12.
Right, which is the best part with that tree.
Which is the greatest part of that green, but you have to have it rolling a 9 or 10.
Seven's the same way.
Exactly, yeah. Same way. So I think it would make the greens a lot smaller, and it wouldn't, you know, have all those runoffs in play because you couldn't put the pins there.
Right.
Seven's the same. I mean, you, like you just said, it's there's really only a few pins if the greens are fast. But you can sneak him on the corners when the greens are rolling, you know, 8 or 9. But I think for tournament speed, it would just eliminate a lot of the cool stuff that's going on there.
Yeah.
I think it's just a perfect glimpse into how different tournament golf is from everything else that we all play. Anybody 100%. Else listen to this and 100%. Whatnot. I mean, it's just a totally different vibe. And I feel like that gap is just getting bigger and bigger out there.
Well, it's you know, when you play a little bit of a funky golf course or, you know, some funky dog legs or, you know, some stuff in private, it's awesome. Man, let me just try to, you know, hit this over there or try to drive the green. But when you're a tournament golf course, you know, when playing a tournament, it's a totally different ballgame. Where do I have the best spot to hit the next shot from? Or where do I putt from next? Or what do I need to, you know, avoid to, you know, have a good shot in there? You know, it's just a lot more thinking involved.
Is that even more stroke play versus match play, kind of the same similar thoughts that go into a round of golf?
Yeah, I mean, I think we don't play a lot of match play. So it's tough to kind of wrap your mind around it. But yeah, I think if you play match play, you play a lot of more, you know, golf courses a lot more aggressively. Because if you, you know, hit one in the water or out of bounds, you're like, okay, well, you can have that hole. Let's go to the next. So right. It's just kind of it is what it is. I think that the more funky the golf course is, the less tournament, I think, value it has, because it's just when it gets firm and it gets fast, the rough's up and the greens are fast, it gets, you know, to the point. I mean, you look at Shinnecock, it's the greens are almost too aggressive. I mean, you look at the 18th green of Shinnecock, the guy's hitting driver 4-iron. And, you know, half of the green really slopes off the – I don't know. It's an old golf course that's not meant to be played for greens that are rolling 13. That's just how it is. Yeah. It's the same with Oakmont. That's why they're so hard.
Yeah.
Because the greens are not built to have balls run, you know, greens run 12, 13 and a half. You know, it's just not – it's not built for that.
Did you watch a lot of the U.S. Open?
I did, and I tried to qualify, and I was kind of glad I didn't make it, honestly.
Which sites did you play at?
I played in Atlanta, so I made it through in Atlanta last year at Hawks Ridge, okay. And then this year it was in Sitting Down Creek, which is a great track.
Oh, I love that place.
Like, really small tough, greens, too, yeah. I think 2-1 under made in a playoff. Wow. So it wasn't really that windy either. It was a good spot to be, and it fit with me. You know, going to Atlanta real quick, and you know, on the way to Memphis, it worked out. And I've made it through twice the U.S. Open on smaller sites, to where, you know, there's maybe 40 guys, a couple spots, and
so you played 15 and 17. You played 2015 and 2017?
No, I played Chambers and Erin Hills, yeah. Which was...
15-17.
Oh, that was...
Yeah.
Oh, what year did I miss? I can't
Oakmont
remember.
Was 16.
Oakmont was 16?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... You're right. Yeah, those are the two I played. Kind of disappointed with those two.
That's a tough draw over the last 10 years.
Yeah. Those miss Oakmont and Shinnecock. Way to go, buddy.
Yeah.
Played Chambers with... cauliflower greens and Erin Hills. That's just, I mean, it's Erin Hills. It's, if you can play it from 8,000 yards, I don't, it,
right.
That's not a golf course to me. So,
what's the best part of your game?
Right now, I putt it really good today. So, I would say that. No, I'm normally a pretty good inside, you know, probably 120, 130, you know, pretty good chipper, pretty good putter normally. Yeah, if I get my iron game and driver game in play, I can do pretty good. This week's tough because it's, you know, it's really narrow, roughs up. So if you don't hit it great, you've got to really, really, you know, scramble to make pars or even, you know, birdies and stuff. So I would say the shorter stuff is probably my expertise.
Well, I was going to say, like, really looking at your success on the web tour, it's been, you know, you've played well at a variety of different courses.
That's the weird part.
You can do some damage with good wedge play on the web.com tour.
The wedge.com
tour. Yeah. I was going to say it, but I didn't want to.
I said it.
Yeah.
You know, somebody asked me the other day about, you know, what's different between the two courses or two, you know, setups. And I said, really the biggest difference is the golf courses, first of all, they're firmer. And if you miss a green, the chances of you getting it up and down are way smaller because the runoffs are tougher, the rough is thicker, the greens are firmer and faster. So you're going to have, you know, quite a hard time getting the balls up and down, and you're coming in with a 7-iron compared to gap wedge. So, you know, for me, I'm going to miss a hell of a lot more greens with a 7-iron than a gap wedge. So that adjustment's been kind of tough because, you know, I could rely on a wedge game and get it on the green and putt well and do well. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, I felt lately that I just can't get in a roll because, you know, having 5-irons and 6-irons, you've got to be so precise out there that you don't have enough birdie opportunities. And then, you know,
you start pressing it
and you're missing the wrong spot. And it's a wrong spot on tour is bogey. There's no, if you're in the wrong spot on the PGA Tour, you cannot make par. You're making a 20-footer par maybe. So it's a lot different than the web in that sense. But, you know, for instance, Knoxville was really firm, but I had 4 drivers in Knoxville.
Wow.
And on tour, you hit 10, you know. So it's just an adjustment period. I think you just kind of you kind of shift your focus from one part of the game a little bit. Say, hey, you know, I do need to get better with my mid-irons. You know, let's say 9 to 6, where that's your scoring clubs really on tour. So it's adjustment period. I think a lot of the guys kind of go through it, and I think
getting consistent starts along the way during that whole process
too is difficult.
What's that been like? I mean, what is your current status for people at home don't know, and how often are you getting in events versus, you know, what are the best times of year for you and whatnot?
This stretch coming up for us is pretty much the biggest for the guys that haven't really done as well as they want to, because all the big guys are taking off between majors, between WGCs, and I mean, they have, let's say they have two majors left. I think 3 or 2 WGCs. Might be 3, right? Maybe 2.
Two more throughout the year, and then playoffs.
Yeah. So you've got in 2.5 months, they've got, you know, 6-7 events.
I mean, technically, there's 3 majors left with the John
Deere. John
Deere, it's a huge event. Well, for us it is because
unironically love the John Deere Classic.
Dude,
call it the fifth major.
It's the next two months are really important for those guys, and I think we'll get probably in all of them. I'm kind of close on the national next week. I think I'm 3 in or something, but for the rest of the season, Greenbrier, John Deere, Barbasol.
Every event that you're in.
I'm playing every single event that I can tee up on. PGA is the only one that I probably won't get in, depending on my play. But there is an event that week.
So you got to come out just firing in the fall series.
Well, you've got to fire in the fall series, and
in
then
order to get into the Florida tournaments.
R.I.P. to the fall series.
That's true.
Exactly.
Wrap around whatever we're calling it.
And then you got to fire in the West Coast.
Yeah.
And that gives you in the Florida events. Honestly, just play consistently. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not going to be up there every week, but you've got to, you know, every once in a while, in every major, you know, area we play in the States, you got to get hot. And I haven't done that. I haven't done that this year. 2018 has been kind of sobering. The fall has been actually – the fall was good. I actually played pretty decent in the fall. Played good in Vegas. Played decent in Sea Island. But it's just 2018 hasn't really gone to the, you know, the good start. I seem to kind of lose it every December. I don't know what happens. We've got a lot of tournaments left that, you know, kind of just flip a switch and and get going on the weekend and have a chance on Sunday, and I'll take my chances from there. For sure.
Probably the most variety on the whole schedule coming up too.
Yeah, a lot of bent stuff. I like bent stuff.
when you play, I know it changes every week, obviously, but on average, how many wedges would you say you have in on the web.com tour to par fours, you know, versus the PGA Tour?
It depends what you play. You play the Tour National, zero.
Right.
I would say you would probably have inside 140 yards, you probably have six.
Yeah.
Seven maybe. PGA Tour two.
Yeah.
And how long are you, I mean, compared to, you know, the rest of the tour?
Very long.
Yeah?
No, I'm not.
I think we have some news for you.
I was like,
you.
Wow, yeah, okay. not what I thought, but okay. I believe
it. And Steven gets drug tested the next 4 weeks.
Listen, I've been drug tested three times this year, so I'm doing something.
That's what happens when you win four times in 36 months.
And they're thinking I'm doing something. Yeah. I hadn't made a cut in 7 weeks, but sure, drug test me. No, I'm probably a little bit above average, I would say. But, you know, you have a lot, like I said, the misses are a lot more penalizing. So you're making a lot more bogeys if you don't hit it in the right spot.
Right.
So I think that's the main part. I don't think the wedges are necessarily the big, you know, the big change. I think the misses and the difficulty of the up and down that you have are the biggest changes. Because, you know, on the web you play, most of the times you don't really play that firm, the greens that fast, the rough that high. So I think it's a combination of a few things. Mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, adjustment period of also getting comfortable, getting, you know, kind of seeing you. I mean, I haven't seen any of these golf courses on tour. So, mm-hmm. Right. And those guys have been out there for, you know, I don't know, 15,
yeah, a lot of them,
20 10,
15,
years.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so they've played those places 12, 20 times, you
right.
know, so excuses, but I think, you know, like I said, it's just part of the deal. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. We'll keep on going.
So I want to hear about, so we talked about, you know, your status and getting into mm-hmm. PGA Tour mm-hmm. events. You pop over to Knoxville a few weeks ago to play a web event. What was the opposite event that week on the PGA Tour?
Players.
So you mm-hmm. weren't in the Players. Just went down to play to get a rep. I mean, I imagine the Tennessee location played into
that. So I played Charlotte the week before, and I kind of felt something in Charlotte that I was like, I missed a cut in Charlotte. Crazy story happened there on Friday. If y'all want to get into that, I'll be happy to tell you a story.
You got a crazy story. Go.
But anyways, I was like,
yada, you know, yada, yada, I won.
Back yada, to the crazy yada, story. Yada. Yeah. What's the story you told me about? Long story short, I was like, dude, I can stay in my house. It's an hour and 10 minutes. I'll drive back and forth. I won't show up till Thursday morning, really. I've played the golf course 10 times. So I went up, played 9 holes on Monday. With a buddy of mine that caddied for me for the week, because I was like, dude, don't worry more about this Knoxville deal. I just, you know, I have my buddy caddy. It's no big deal. And drove back and forth every day. Stayed Thursday night because I had a 7 o'clock tee time on Friday. But honestly, I didn't really play that good the first 2 days. I think I was 3 under, maybe 2 under. And I would have already missed the cut on the PGA Tour. I would have missed the cut 100% with the way I played the first 2 rounds. I would have missed the cut. I wouldn't have the chance on the weekend. And I got home, and on Friday afternoon, I hit some balls on range, and something kind of, you know, just kind of clicked. Found a secret. I didn't find a secret. I wish I did, but
temporary. You borrowed the secret.
I borrowed it until I lost it again a couple of days later. I played really good on the weekend. You know, I was putting well that week. You know, putting really good. My wedges kind of getting closer and closer, and I just kind of killed it on the weekend. And
64.
Ended up get a ton. You know, ended up winning. I don't know how many I won by. I think 3. And it was awesome, dude. I mean, you know, you go there and you're like, oh, it's just, I'll play for the week, just kind of get a rep, get some momentum. I don't think the guys like that very much because, man, this guy from freaking PGA Tour comes down there and son of a bitch takes all the money.
Well, the only thing that
are you gonna play the Tennessee State Open this year?
Sorry, Ben.
The only thing that should make him feel
missed
better
the entry
is
deadline.
That Sung J.M. came in second.
Yes,
he's been winning everything this year anyway.
I know,
so
poor guy.
Yeah,
I feel bad for him.
Exactly.
So, what's the crazy story from Wells
Fargo? So, I teed off on the front on Friday, and I'm around the cut nine. I think I'm one over or one under or something. And I play the short par four, the 14th, with the water on the left.
Yep.
And pin was all the way in the back, so I went off the left. I was like, dude, I'll lay up. I'll get a wedge there. And, you know, I've got 15, pretty easy par five, and, you know, get something going and sneak in the weekend there. And I pulled my 3-iron, and I hit it just left of that bunker and hit pretty hard and went towards the water there. And I was like, shit. You know, go up there, and the volunteer goes up. Oh, yeah. So he hit next to the bunker, and it shot left into the hazard. I said, okay, well, did you see it go in the water? And she was like, yeah, it's in the hazard. I was like, okay, sure. I don't walk around 50 yards around and see if it's in the hazard if she says it's in the hazard. Oh yeah, you know where I'm going.
Yeah.
So I drop, hit it on the green, walk past the bunker towards the green and look left, and there's my ball sitting in the grass in the hazard, totally playable. Guys, I think I was this close to a mental breakdown at that point. You know, you've missed five cuts in a row, and you're already on the edge, and this lady tells me it's in the hazard. And obviously, I mean, it's my fault. I should have freaking looked and got up there and, you know, saved my ball. But you trust those volunteers to help you out and whatever. And I lost it. I mean, I lost it. I think I yelled at this lady for a solid 3 minutes across the fairway. I had the rules official come, you know, ask him, like, listen, she told me this or whatever.
Slugger's playing mediator.
Oh, my God. I lost it. I felt so bad because at the moment, dude, I was so mad. You know, because it's not a Saturday or a Sunday. You know, it's crunch time. It's Friday afternoon. So you're already on the edge if you're on the cut line. And I felt bad. I apologized and stuff. But
I'm sure she's listening to the podcast.
I'm sure she is.
Yeah, I think she'll probably forgive
me. And if she's listening, I don't know your name, but I'm sorry. I just, in the moment, it was just not the right thing to tell me. That it is in the hazard, and it wasn't a hazard, but it was on grass.
It's
so
almost like the PGA Tour volunteers maybe aren't the best trained and the best people at.
No comment.
So is this the longest you've ever been into an interview without somebody bringing up the 58?
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys, is that the next?
That's it. We're out of questions.
So you shot 58 two years ago. Yeah, what was that like? Well, I was blackout. So.
I don't know where to start with the question.
Have you always just blacked out? I mean, the 64-64 is kind of the same, you know, same thing.
Same as a 58,
I don't know. Well, no, I mean, you know what I'm saying. It's a certain kind of blackout.
If I feel
that it takes,
really
right?
good, and that's why I think the records kind of show once I get in contention and can I get close to the lead. I don't know what it is. It just all my worries and all the other stuff that's there when I'm playing, you know, when I'm playing on Thursday, Friday, and you're just kind of like, oh, what do I have this week? What, you know, what we got? And like, I don't want to hit it in there. All gone. I just, you see one thing, you see the fairway, you see the green, you see, but it's awesome. It really is. I'd love to get there more often than, you know, a few times a year.
What was the lowest you'd shot? Prior.
Before?
Yeah, tournament or non-tournament.
So I shot 62 one time with a buddy of mine. It wasn't a tournament. I think the lowest I shot before that was 63 in a junior tournament and when I played in college. So wasn't even close. I mean, I was never at like 60 or 61. I had a putt at it or nothing. So, you know, it's I feel really comfortable when I get on those runs. And
to start at the right part of the round, you know, the first hole instead of the 14th hole.
Well,
or
I didn't
like that,
really.
Know?
So when I started, I missed a 10 footer on the first.
Should have been 57.
Well,
you left a couple out there. That's what we're gonna get to.
Yeah, I mean, let's be serious. I left a few out there, but no, I was a birdie to second, hitting the bunker on a par three in the next up and down. So I was one under through three. Nothing crazy. Birdied the next, part 18. So I'm six under, through nine holes, which is.
Did you play the back nine first or the front nine?
Yeah,
first?
The back nine. Okay. I think the kind of thing that got going was 18. I had like a 10-footer for par. I had a shitty chip and made that. And, you shoot 29 sometimes. It's great, but kind of backing it up.
Yeah, we trust, you're preaching to the choir here, man.
So, you guys do that all the time.
Look, we know.
It's a bit dull, even.
God, I make three birdies in a row.
Michael Arnott shot 27-28 at Greenville.
Yeah.
That's balling.
Jesus.
I mean, I shot 29.
That was straight up demoralizing.
These guys were playing in the pro-am portion, and it just...
Did you play with them?
No,
but we just
They
saw,
were scoreboard
oh
watching,
God.
Though.
I don't even think it's that easy, the front nine, is it?
Front nine is the most... It's par 35 with two par fives, right?
So, no, and three par threes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's...
Three's hard.
Three's not easy. Yeah.
Eight's hard.
It was
nine's
so
kind of
hard, though, too. I mean,
it totally explains 27.
He shot
55 with a bogey.
Yeah, I know. That's the craziest part.
Yeah, but 27 had a bogey, wasn't it? Or the 28?
28 okay. had a bogey, yeah.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, that's good playing. It really is. But
so, like, at what point, all right, do you realize at some point that, so, all right, so you were 600 through nine.
Yeah.
And then
birdie 1-2, 1-2. So I'm 8 under.
You parred a par 5 then.
Yeah, 3 putted.
Oh my God.
3 putted.
And then you birdie the next 3. So then you are 11 under with 3 to play.
Yes. And I hit a awesome shot on 7. It's kind of this uphill par 4. And I hit 9 iron. And all the whole left side kind of slopes towards the pin. And I hit it right where I was looking. I was like, oh my God, hold it. I was like, I'm so blackout, I just hold the second shot. And it stayed on top of the ridge, like there on the fairway, or I guess fringe. And I had it actually pretty hard up and down. I kind of putted it kind of through some fringe and down to the left. And next hole, I hit a good drive, and I hit a wedge like 40 feet short of the slope. Pretty severe slope uphill. And I never really, you get nervous, but I was never really that nervous. And then when I saw, who was it? I think it was Mark Silvers and two other guys were on 7 tee box when I was in 8 green. It's very close. And there was a scoreboard right behind 8. And they're all staring at me. And I'm like, well, I guess I'm doing pretty good.
Who were you playing with?
I was playing with Nate Lashley and Diego Velasquez.
Okay. And were they kind of giving you like the silent or the perfect game?
Dude, we're talking on the fairway.
Okay, so they're just acting like everything's normal.
I don't get that whole silent, don't talk to the pitcher kind of deal.
Yeah.
That would make me way more nervous.
For sure.
But you knew thinking about it.
You knew exactly what your score was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was. But like them waiting on me to putt from like 50 yards away was like, okay, let me just, So I hit it up there pretty close. It was like, couple inches close, and then we get to 9, and it's just par 5, and this bunker comes in the fairway at 300 yards, and if you hit a good drive, you can get there in 2 for sure. Kind of goes downhill, and you get, you can hit 3 or 4 on in. And I look at Fleener, and I was like, dude, I'm not hitting driver. I'm 11 under. I can make par, and I'm going to shoot 59.
You're breaking our hearts right
that's
now.
That's all I thought about. All I thought about. At the time, I was like, I want a 5 on my score. So I hit a great 3 with up there, and I laid up to like 95 yards.
All right, we're gonna end the interview right now.
We're gonna edit this part out.
No laying up unless you're 11 under through 17.
Yes, we'll allow it.
That trumps.
Thank you.
Yeah, that trumps. Yeah, I get it. Yeah. That's fine.
I mean,
I'm a big proponent of laying up, actually. I totally get it. Yeah.
He's off the team.
Yeah, that's fine.
He feels like he's in a safe place. He can say it.
There's so many things that can go wrong, and I would have just, I don't think I would have been okay with it if
I
made
bogey. So you executed the layup well, like you hit it to the right number and
yes,
everything.
And then I hit a wedge just where I wanted it, 10 feet right of the hole. And ran that sucker right in the back of the hole.
So hard.
I did not want to hit it that hard, and it went in there.
Philosophically, I feel like laying up to preserve, you know, the history of a 59.
Thank you.
It is kind of like not laying up. You know what I mean? Like,
well, and then making birdie anyway and shooting 58.
Right.
I didn't lay up. The ends justify the means. You know, day. So right. I just laid up on the last hole, which, you know.
Like if he had said, well, it's strategically, it's not the right play.
I hit driver on the hole.
But if saying
before,
like, no, I really want to shoot 59. I get it.
I had driver on a couple of the other par fives, so that's
we're cool. Hey, no. We'll allow it for 58.
Don't
we'll
kick
allow
me out of
it.
Here, please.
Well, all right. So shooting 58 is one thing. Shooting it in the first round, and then like the fact that you shot 58, 65, 64, 63. Shot 64, 63 on the weekend, and your scoring average
decreased for the week.
Like what?
Was it 62.5 or something for the week?
For the week, I think. But your scoring average was lower, you know, after shooting 50. After your first two rounds than it was. I mean,
yeah.
Like the rest of the week, were you thinking, "Oh man, like I can't be the one guy to shoot 58 and then not win this damn thing."
Yeah, like Furyk did.
I was gonna say,
yeah. How about that?
The next week.
And was it next week?
Second.
Both times. He shot 59 at Conway. He lost too.
He finished second?
Yeah.
Well, so I bogeyed the first hole the next day after shooting 50. I was like,
here we go. Like,
it's just not his day, huh?
I was like, here we go again. You know, I was 150th on the money list. But no, dude, that week was just – it was just – it just it was my week. You know, I got the breaks, you know – I made the putts. I've got the breaks, and once again, you kind of get in that flow, and it was game over from then. Really, I think even on Sunday, I think I shot 5 under on the front nine or something, like crazy. Just not.
And by that point, you're just kind of on autopilot.
Like, you just
bought
it. You know, everything. Everything's working. You're hitting it right where you want to. You're hitting the putts right where you want to. So, it was pretty. You know, it was pretty easy from then on in. But you getting to that spot is the harder part.
Do you think about that week when you're not playing well? Like,
yeah.
Does it frustrate you that why can't I do that again?
Man, if I could do that all the time, I think it wouldn't be fun. Because
that's good perspective.
Because the miserable
times.
That's
why times, we don't. Yeah. Yeah, that's why we never do that. Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm glad you could learn the lesson.
Yeah, thank you. It's golf is so miserable when it's not good. It's so miserable when it's not good that you enjoy the good times way more than. Like if you've never had a bad round of golf, you're not going to enjoy the good ones. I mean, ask Justin. He probably hadn't had a bad round of golf and freaking 2 years.
Right.
But for the normal human beings on this earth, like we play bad golf every once in a while. You know, we just don't. We hack sometimes. So when we do play good, man, this feels great. It's just kind of like a, you know, you kind of know you're humbled very quickly in this stupid game.
I love how we just went normal human beings. Was the phrase you just used after talking about you shooting 58 in a professional
golf
event.
So all right, so kind of going to that flip side, how frustrating was that to win on the web tour and then not get your card?
You know, honestly, I was glad because I don't think I was really ready at that point. You know, I had one good week for the whole year. Mm-hmm. I think I made 150 grand that year and made 108 there. I mean, it was just not – it wasn't consistent enough. I don't think I would have done well. I think it did me more good kind of wetting my beak again for the next year and winning a few times and really playing the Open and making the cut in the Erin Hills and kind of just knowing that you can play out there. Obviously, you know, I was on fire at that point. So you're kind of on a groove level at that point. But you know, it just happens just because the way the web is structured still. with the money list, if you win a small purse event, you've got to play well again. You know, that's a whole other topic. I think you can discuss for hours, but yeah. I think if you win a Columbia or a Greenville, you make $120,000, $121,000, $126,000. You're only a fifth away from, you know, getting your tour card.
Yeah.
So I think it. I'm glad it didn't work out in the long run. I think I got a lot more confidence through the 2017 season and finishing it off well and getting better every year. I think that's I've kind of stretched that a lot lately. I want to be able to say, hey, I've gotten better every year. And if you look at my, you know, my progression over the years, it went from kind of shitty to, yeah, I'm pretty good.
I've proven myself. Yeah.
So, and I think that's the way it should go. I don't think it should go back down. I think it should get better every year. And if it goes back down, you're doing something wrong.
So then going forward, like to your next win at the BMW Charity Pro-Am, mm-hmm. Was that even more satisfying or more fulfilling? And it was a little bit different because it was a rain shortened.
I think the Chicago win a couple weeks later was more fulfilling because in the back of your mind, you're like, okay, well, I probably would have won that event,
mm-hmm.
but it was shortened. So I never really got a chance to actually beat everybody that day.
Dude, I felt the same way. I was playing the Pro-Am. And Chesson was playing well, and it was like, man, we want a shot at these guys. And then we realized that even if we did play on Sunday, I wasn't going to be playing because there was some sort of clerical error.
Well, and the funny thing is, Chesson was probably really worried about you playing the Pro-Am. I'm sure that was his number one priority.
So you should be thanking me right now. Yes, I think I held him back by a few shots to allow you.
Exactly. You know, in the back of your mind, you're always kind of like, yeah, you know, I don't know. You never know if you would have won. What if somebody shoots 62 to beat you by, mm-hmm. you know, two? So you don't know. So for me to kind of 2 weeks later go to Chicago and really play really well on a hard golf course with some wind, really kind of solidified my, you know, comfort level on that tour. And
then, you know, you've got your card locked up at that point too.
Exactly. Which is kind of weird because it changed a little bit. You know, my goal in the beginning of the season was get my PGA Tour card. And after 3 months, you got it. You're like, okay,
do you have it in the back of your mind, the Battlefield promotion?
Like, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why, you know, I was going to take some weeks off to kind of get ready for the fall.
Be able to start fresh in September.
Series,
October.
But, it's weird because you're like, oh, I won twice. This is easy. And then
that's three wins at home. For those listening at home, three wins on the web tour gets you automatic promotion to the PGA Tour.
And it's so much harder when you try to win.
Yeah.
All my wins have kind of happened in a way. You know, obviously, you know, Ellie Mae was, you know, you start off well and you're just kind of pedal to the metal. But all the other ones are just kind of came from, oh yeah, I'm around and I get a sniff and then I'm gone. So it's weird. You're trying to win that third time and get to Battlefield. You're trying too hard and you're it's a weird, golf's a weird sport, man. I still hadn't figured it out. I don't think anybody's figured it out. Otherwise, you know, they would have been, they'd be winning every week. So
did you always know you wanted to be a professional golfer?
I think kind of when I went to the States, I think that dream or goal was kind of, and not in the back of my mind, it was kind of more in front of mine, just kind of be like, yeah, you know, I think this is what I want to do.
What would you have done if you stayed in Germany?
Shit, I don't know. I would have probably worked with my dad and his, you know, his company and kind of done that. Even though I don't know how travel agencies now survive with all the internet stuff, you know, you don't really need that anymore. So, probably would have done that. I would guess. I don't know. I think at that point I was all in. I think I was talking to somebody the other day It was German. It was a German. It was a German interview, and they're like, "So, you know, what was your plan B?" I'm like, "Plan B? The fuck is that?" I was like, "Dude, I was gonna be a golf professional, and I was gonna make it, and period."
Yeah.
Again,
like, there's no, "Oh, if I don't, I'm gonna give myself 3 years, and if I don't get it on the web, I'll sell real estate." Right. No, that's not in my DNA. I don't do that. I'm gonna do this, and I'm gonna work on it. And yeah, if you've been losing money for 10 years, I probably would find a job. But I'll figure that out then, and not 5 years in advance. Be like, "Okay, so I'm gonna give myself 5 years. After the fifth year, if I don't make it to there, work at Costco." I'm not doing that. So I think it's just one of those things I've always kind of dreamed of and worked towards, and it's very fulfilling to have accomplished that in a way. I've got a lot more goals that I want to accomplish in this game, and hopefully a lot more years to be able to do that.
I know we've made this joke a lot already on this podcast, but like, that's literally the difference between a professional golfer and myself, because like that idea of like, "Oh yeah, no, it's going to work out, 'cause I'm going to go do it." My brain is already triggered and like, "Hey, any kids listen to this, guys, don't, it's really hard. Like, don't think like that. It might not work out. Have a plan, have a contingency." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's why I didn't end up playing pro golf."
Well, it's probably a little more than, "Hey, I'm going to just do it." I think it's dedication in a lot
for sure.
of sense.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you've got to have, you know, surround yourself on the right people. And a lot of times it doesn't work out. A lot of times it doesn't. But you got to give it a shot. Now, I think if you have a plan B, you're always kind of leaning on that.
Yeah.
And I did not. That's not. I didn't want
to
do that.
It's got to be hard to look back and answer this, but kind of coming out of school, you're probably, you know, you're young and dumb and don't really have a true expectation. But looking back, would you say it's been easier, harder, or about what you expected your career so far?
I think I'd have liked to have been, you know, done a lot of stuff a little quicker. You know, gotten on the web quicker, gotten success more, you know, quicker, gotten on the PGA Tour quicker. But I think everything kind of comes with experience a little bit. And I've always been somebody that kind of needed a couple years under his belt to kind of get, you know, comfortable, you know, even in college. I don't think I won my first event in college until junior year. And so I needed those 2 years before to kind of see, get better and learn the ways of what I need to do to get there. And same way on the web, I think, you know, on and off for 3 years until I've won my first event, played on Latin Tour for a year, and it's just kind of back and forth a little bit. And I got better every year and just kept working on it. And, once again, missed my card out by, you know, a couple grand, and the next year got back out and won twice, and you know,
and did it in the first half of the season.
That's my goal. I want to be able to say, "Hey, I got better every year." And if sometimes, you know, this year if it doesn't work out the way I want to, I think I would still say, as a golfer, I've gotten better, because I know, you know, what it takes out there to, you know, be successful and stuff. So I know what to work on, and know, you know, what kind of stuff I have to, you know, kind of, you know, just do at home to be able to compete.
What, as far as on tour or on the web, you know, between your kind of German heritage and living in Tennessee now, is there anybody out there that's kind of taking you under their wing, or?
You know, I think, you know, high school buddies that, you know, Harris has kind of done a pretty, you know, good job on hey, what do I need to stay? You know, we all know kind of how to play golf, figure out a golf course. I think that also comes with, you know, playing that golf course a few times. But Alex Shaker is kind of one of the guys that I would probably, you know, kind of similar. He's kind of like a grinder.
Yeah.
And, you know, people don't give him credit. I was talking to this guy the other day, and
he's been like, around a long time too.
Tell you what, and it makes me so mad. The guy has probably made $20 million over his career on the PGA Tour. 15, million. I don't know the exact number, but he's made a lot of money on tour. And this reporter comes up to me today, and he was like, "So, what's it like to be the only German in America?" I was like, "He's been here for 20 years, you know." So, and I like the guy. He's a gritty competitor. He gets it done. He works at it. He's 47, you know, the guy, and he's having a pretty good season. Yeah. So, it's just kind of cool to have somebody like that out there, and have some of your older, you know, Harris, you know, has been out there for 5 years. So I would, you know, he's kind of a veteran, not a veteran, but he knows, you know, the ins and outs of it. So having those guys out there is pretty important.
Are you more comfortable speaking German or English at this point?
My German has gotten a lot better in the last 6 days.
What's no laying up in German?
What? No what? Laying up?
Yeah.
Nicht vorlegen.
Nicht vorlegen.
Yeah, right. Genau.
Pretty good.
But it really depends, because I don't really speak it in the States. I don't have anybody. The only guy I could ever speak it with is either Alex, but we speak like a mixture of gross, like German, two words of German, four words of English. Like, there's no chance you can have any clue what we're saying. But, you know, once a week with my family, so I don't get a lot of practice. So when I get home and I have 5-6 days of continuously, you know, speaking German, I can tell immediately that it gets better, and, you know, the flow of the conversation gets better. And it's kind of embarrassing if you don't, you know, that's my
right.
native language, you know. So I need to do a better job of kind of staying on top of that.
So is this your first European tour event?
No, so I've played the BMW in 2013 or 14. That was my first time I played as a pro.
Okay.
And I played as an amateur in 2011.
Okay.
Those are both on my home course in Munich. And then I played the Porsche European Open 2 years ago in Bad Griesbach, just kind of south Germany there.
And I know you'll be back next year for – it's going back to Munich next year.
Yes, right? It's going back the next 4 years. It's going to be Munich. They're just redoing the greens. It's going to be fantastic. I hope they're doing I think they're going to do a great job. The greens are 40 years old, so they needed new surface, and they needed kind of new, you know, under sand underneath to kind of firm them up a little
bit. Is it bent here?
Bent Buena. I mean, I think they were all bent at some point, but the Buena took over. But, they were just kind of soft and mushy. We have a lot. It's not swamp per se, but it's kind of soft, mossy kind of grass. Yeah. So the greens kind of got, you know, pretty bumpy and soft. So they're redoing it. I'm really looking forward to it. I hope I get the chance again next year and in the future. I've told a lot of people I want to play this event every year as long as I'll play.
Well, that's something just, like, would you – you know, assuming some success moving forward on the PGA Tour in coming years.
Yeah.
Is that something you look forward to, is coming over and playing not only this event and, you know, a couple of the other ones, but playing, you know, maybe a half dozen or a dozen events, you know, say you've had a good year on the tour.
Just enough to further ride a cup. No, I think that's, you know, one of the goals. You got to play enough events to qualify for the Ryder Cup. You got to be a member. And, my main focus is the U.S. Tour. It's just, you know, that's why I'm based in the States, and I'm based, you know, where I am. But I want to, you know, I want to play the events in Germany. It's two German, you know, European Tour events in Germany now. Mm-hmm. There's one in Austria. So why not play?
Shot Clock Masters. Yeah,
baby. under 4 hours.
Yeah.
But no, it's, I think, you know, going in the future, I think the BMW is in my heart. I think I grew up watching that event when I was a little kid. So it's
probably the one down in Switzerland too, right? The Omega European
Omega,
Master.
Yeah. That golf course looks really tight. I think I'm out on that. So no, it's definitely, you know, that's the plan to kind of, you know, I wouldn't say split time. I want to like you said, half
just kind of complement
your
schedule.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe play the Scottish before the British.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. So you're, you know, you're every once in a while,
you're making the most
sense in your schedule, you do it. So
cool.
What's, last one, I'll let you get out here. Mm-hmm. What's your top speed on the Autobahn? I want to see how Tron held up.
So I think personally driving, the fastest I've ever gone was probably 260 kilometers, which is about. Yeah.
We're just,
I think that's 140-ish.
It's more than that. It's about 150 at least.
Yeah, maybe 150.
You nipped us by a little bit.
Yeah, the fastest I've ever gone in a car was like close to 200.
200 miles per hour.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. In a Porsche, and the guy was driving.
We'll bleep that out. Yeah.
BMW, right?
In a Porsche. I don't know. I hated the car. I don't know how he drove it. But no, it was scary. It really was. I was very uncomfortable. Just because the sides almost look like they're, you know, there's one.
It's a blur.
It's just, it's very uncomfortable. He only did it for probably 15 seconds or so, but because you just, you know, you never know if somebody pulls out, you're going 200, you're,
I mean, that was, we were doing, I think our top speed was 240.
Yeah.
240 kilometers.
Yeah.
An hour, which is like 100, 149. So, yeah, that was, but it was like, you know, at no point did I, maybe these guys, I don't want to speak for these guys.
That,
we were in X6.
That was good
so
for
it's,
me. That was good for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it's a big,
you know, that
was
it's good. A, that was it's a little good. Bit higher yeah. up. Yeah. But I think the thing for me is when you're given the opportunity to go as fast as you want, when there is a speed limit, like when it does kick down to 120 or 100 kilometers, you follow it. Because you're like, all right, there's a reason that
there's
a speed limit here. Yeah,
yeah, there's a curve that I can't take going 240. Yeah.
Like, you know there's a good reason for it.
Well, and the other thing you know is if you're on a road that you can go as fast as you possibly want to, you know the road's good. So there ain't going to be a pothole.
Right.
Well, I noticed that today, actually, on the way up was –
they're straight.
There was certain spots even. Where I was wondering when we got north of like Stuttgart, I was wondering why it wasn't just no speed limit. But then I realized it would only go to no speed limit if it was like a relatively freshly paved road too. It wasn't just the turns or the straightaways. It was also like the condition of the road.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you know, guys, you know, 240 is pretty quick, or 150 miles an hour, you said, but guys go on an Autobahn to go 200,
exactly.
220.
Yeah.
So like if you have a little curve that you can take going, you know, I don't know, 200 kilometers an hour, you can't take that going 300 kilometers an hour.
Right.
So I think that's why they kind of stopped having it open for, you know, long periods of time, because the roads, the cars going so fast nowadays that the roads won't allow that.
Yeah. All right. Very last one, I promise. Right. What's the most annoying German stereotype, like from Americans?
From Americans about Germans?
Yes.
That we drink beer out of a boot.
I have seen no boots since we've been here.
Can confirm.
I think that's from that movie.
Yeah.
Beer Fest.
Yeah.
I have never even heard of that. I got to the States and like,
you're probably more likely
beer out of the boot. I'm like, what?
You're probably more likely to see somebody drinking beer out of a boot in Chattanooga than you are.
Yes, because it's German. I don't know. No, I would. That's not a stereotype, but that's kind of like a perception of us. We're drinking beer out of boots. I've never even seen boot in my life.
Today at lunch, when Tron asked, "Hey, can I have a beer?" They're like, "Oh, we don't have beer. We have Kolsch."
Yeah, Kolsch. Yeah, I'm not.
Which I love Kolsch, but I'm like, hey, it's,
I don't know. It's Pilsner kind of. I'm more of a Hefeweizen kind of guy.
Bavarian.
Well, we posted up at the Schneider Weiss place the other night.
I don't think they have any beer left.
You'd be surprised.
And then we went back for breakfast the next morning.
Yeah, it was great.
They recognized us. Got some Weiss first. It was top notch.
Good.
We got the full
nice.
Bavarian experience.
Yeah, I like
so.
That. I like that you All guys right. give the whole cultural experience.
Got to. That's what other reason would you have to come here? So, all right, we kept you for a long ass time, but man, that was a lot of fun. Appreciate
hey guys,
it. So,
thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. Best
good
of luck
tomorrow.
The rest of the week. Yeah.
Thanks.
Enjoy. Cheers. Thanks.
Be the right club today. Yeah!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!